McCartney fans, and welcome to another edition of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of one Sir James Paul McCartney. I am one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, my friend, my buddy, my backwards traveler, Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on?
Not much, brother. Hanging in here and trying to stay cool. In good old hot New Jersey. Not as bad as where you are in dry Arizona, but...
Yeah, yeah, we're still hot. We're still
I know. Well, it's hot there 12 months out of the year, so you're used to it. I mean, we're not.
We've had the air conditioning on since April, so...
I'm sure. So I'm doing well and ready for another good show here with our friend Ted.
Great, and as you can see, our good friend Ted Montgomery is back. Now, you might remember Ted. He came back on the show late last year, actually. He came on to talk about his book right here, The Paul McCartney Catalog. We did a little giveaway, and then he came back on after we got to read the book, and we really talked to him. We drilled him on it, and we said, how can you say that about With a Little Luck? What is wrong with you?
Yes, we did.
But he's also here to talk about the second edition of his first book, The Beatles Through Headphones, and we're pleased to bring back Ted Montgomery. Ted, how you doing, my friend?
It's good to see you guys, and it's been a tough few months for everyone I know. I hope you guys are doing well, you and your families.
Yes.
We are. Thank you. Thank you, Ted.
Yeah. So on today's show, we're going to be discussing the Paul McCartney, Denny Lane collaboration, pretty much the songs that they wrote together during Denny's time through Wings up until, I'd say, 71 all the way up until 81 or 82 when Rain Clouds was released on the B-side of Ebony and Ivory. But first, we got some news. Andy and I are really happy things are really working for us. We're going to be doing a collaboration with one of my favorite Beatles podcasts, Things We Said Today. That's with Ken Michaels and Darren DeVivo. Now, it also has Alan Cozen on it, but he's busy working on another Paul McCartney project called The McCartney Legacy with Adam Sinclair. He's got a deadline of October to get the first volume done, which I believe is, I believe they're starting with The Family Way
till about
67 and then ending in 73.
Yeah.
So he's got that deadline to meet in October, so we decided to join forces. Also, we were supposed to collaborate with them during the Fest of Beatle Fans, but somehow that didn't work out. So we said, hey, you know, let's end up doing something. So we worked it out, and come September, Andy and I will both be on Things We Said Today. And then later on in the month, Darren DeVivo and Ken Michaels will be joining us for an episode of Four Legs, you know, instead of two. But anyways, looking forward to that. That's definitely going to be a pinch me, I must be dreaming type situation, because that was one of the first Pop Beatles podcasts that I discovered way back in 2012. And also more good news is Two Legs is also going to be on Fab Four Radio, which is an internet Beatles radio network, and all they do is play Beatles, solo Beatles, things related to the Beatles, and so many other goodies, interviews. So we're happy to announce that starting next week, Two Legs should be on there as well. So a lot of cool things happening, a lot of more guests that's popping up too that we'll announce soon down the line. But yeah, it's good times, man. Looking forward to it, Andy. So
absolutely, yep.
You know. But anyways, like I said, we're getting back to Ted Montgomery. He's announcing that there's going to be a second edition of his first book, The Beatles Through Headphones. And let's talk about that for a second. You're adding more chapters to the book from the original edition?
Yes, guys. The book originally came out in September of 2014. And, you know, there's been lots of Beatle product released since then. So it's just an update. It's an addition to the existing edition, and we'll continue with deep dives into one, the remix of the deluxe sets for Sgt. Pepper, the White Album, Abbey Road, and wow. Let It Be, and also some stuff about the Beatles' Christmas album and the release of Live at Hollywood Bowl, which sort of accompanied Ron Howard's great film, Eight Arms to Hold You.
Right.
Or is that when, 8 days a week? I'm sorry.
8 days a week. There you go. Yeah. Your actual title for Help. Right?
Yes. Right.
Yeah. So when are you looking to have this this new edition out?
It should be done by the Christmas season, so sometime before the end of the calendar year. As we get closer, I'll have a better date for you, and I'll keep you apprised.
Yeah, and we'll keep everybody posted on here as well. Now, Ted's been generous enough to offer three books for a giveaway. We'll see here. Do you have a favorite? So we're talking about the Denny Lane, Paul McCartney collaborations, the songs they co-wrote. Do you have a favorite of that bunch? Don't say it right now, but do you have a favorite, Ted?
Yeah, I probably do. I also can say that I have a favorite that was never released that we can talk about too.
Great. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. When we talk about your personal favorite, let's do that, and then people can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com and just repeat what your favorite McCartney Denny Lane composition was. How's that?
Okay.
For the giveaway.
Yeah, for the giveaway. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Pay attention, people.
So we'll talk about that again at the end of the show, and we'll also, I'm sure all of these books will probably be available on Amazon and other
websites.
Electronic format too, Ted?
Yes, there'll be an e-edition.
Cool.
Correct. Okay, there you go. Excellent. So looking forward to that. And also, don't forget that the Paul McCartney catalog is still available, correct, Ted?
It sure is. It's been doing pretty well, large part for you guys, I'm sure.
Oh, man, that was a really fun episode, and I hope it worked out well for you promotion-wise. And I remember seeing a lot of comments on that particular episode on YouTube. People were really kind of like, oh, this guy's really opinionated. But I'm like, well, he sticks to it, you know?
Yep.
So it was a good one.
Aren't we all kind of opinionated?
Yeah, of course we are. Yeah, but you did it like in a very matter-of-factly way, whereas a lot of people will just go on through eons and explain why they like or don't like something.
Yeah.
You just said, I like it, I don't like it, and that was pretty much, and that was it.
Definitely room in this world for people who like with a little luck.
Mm-hmm. Hey, man. Don't hate on my with little luck.
I love that album.
And that album, as a matter of fact, is going to be featured.
That's why. Well, yeah, I think that's why I left it at the ready, because I figured it was going to come up in our conversation today.
Yeah, I mean, lots of Denny and Paul on that album, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So before we get started, I'm going to do a little brief summary into Denny Lane's career. We'll talk about, you know, what he was doing prior to joining Wings. Let's see, he was
Moody.
What's that?
Moody Blues, baby.
Yeah, he was original member of Moody Blues, formed in 64, left the band in late 66. He did sing the number one UK hit, Go Now.
Great.
Toured with the Beatles in 65.
Pop quiz, Tom, where are the Moody Blues originally from? What city in England? Don't Google it.
Birmingham?
Brilliant.
Ted got it.
No, yeah. I said it first.
Yeah,
you did.
You didn't say it right, though.
Oh. No, you can't pronounce the H, right? It's Birmingham.
Right.
Birmingham. Yeah, and all otherwise known as Brumbeat.
Okay. So they toured with the Beatles in 65. They actually were friends with the Beatles prior to that as well. So Denny's history with Paul goes back to the early 60s. After leaving the Moody Blues, he forms a band called Electric String Band, which is kind of ELO-ish. You can listen to some of that on YouTube. I actually recommend checking some of that out, because you can definitely tell, you know, that maybe ELO had a little influence from that. But it was really cool. this band actually opened for Jimi Hendrix, and Paul McCartney was actually there. He got to witness Denny Lane in this electric string band, which, you know, for Paul as being such a, you know, an avant-garde fan too, I mean, an experimental fan, I'm sure he must have, excuse me, enjoyed that, enjoyed seeing Denny, you know, tackle that kind of thing. Let's see here. When Electric String Band failed to take off, he formed a band called Balls, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, which did, I think they only released one single. Then he also worked at around the same time, he also worked with Ginger Baker and his band, Ginger Baker's Air Force, which was kind of like a jazz rock fusion type thing. Yeah. You know, three drummers. I think Alan White was in the band at one point as well. Some horn players, you know, a couple of guitarists. So it was, that was quite interesting as well. That's all that stuff that you can listen to on YouTube, and I definitely recommend checking that out.
You know, we've talked about collaborations, and we've done a lot of shows on collaborations with Paul Elvis Costello and the like.
Right.
And this is an interesting one, and I have to actually give Ken Michaels credit, because he talked about it on the latest Things We Said Today. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, and I don't know if you listened to it yet, but the Moody Blues did a show with the Beatles. I think that one, that tour in 65, and also right. on the same bill was Wayne Fontana and the right. Mindbenders, and he just recently passed away. But as right. you know, Eric Stewart was also in the mind, yep. was also in the Mindbenders. So in that one show, you got two future collaborators of Paul McCartney, all on the same bill. How right. crazy is that?
That's crazy. And then we'll also be doing an Eric Stewart, you know, McCartney collaboration soon, probably next month.
Yeah, well. I had not heard that Wayne Fontana had passed away until I heard them talk about it on Things We Said Today. So
Got you. So, you know, Denny Lane, he's a multi-talented musician. I mean, he can, you know, provide rhythm guitars, bass, keyboards, woodwinds. He's a great backing vocals with Linda that, you know, we've come to love throughout Wings history. You know, he is a songwriter, but he's not, you know, he's always seemed like interviews that I've seen with him, it always seemed like he didn't really take it seriously until he, you know, connected with Paul in Wings, and Paul was always there to kind of like, you know, push him a little bit to be more of a songwriter. And that way, you know, you can, you know, take some of the heat off of Paul. That way he doesn't have to do everything. But, you know, he has contributed some songs. Not all of them made it onto Wings albums, but we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, it took a little while for them to start, you know, gelling as a songwriting team, even though it wasn't a huge songwriting team. At least they did, you know, collaborate on a few things. You see here, he writes, to begin with, he writes, you know, I Would Only Smile, which was going to be for the proposed double album for Red Rose Speedway. That gets cut, so now that song doesn't get released until Japanese Tears, I think, right. Late in December of 80. What else we got here?
And I know we talked about I Lie Around. It's not a co-written, but I kind of feels like a collaboration because they both.
It's definitely a collaboration in the fact that McCartney writes the song. Denny Lang sings, I think, two verses, and then I think McCartney comes in with the last verse.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's a kind of a collaboration as well. So, and then lastly, you know, they do release I Would Only Smile on the Red Rose Speedway box set. So I'm kind of wondering if, you know, Denny saw any kind of like royalties or anything like that, or any kind of
payment. I'm sure. You know, yeah.
You know, for Paul, you know, having it put on the on his box set. So that would have been pretty cool. So, you know, what are your thoughts on Denny Lane, Ted? You know, after being a big Wings fan yourself.
Were you aware of him before his involvement in Wings? Did you know that he was a member of the Moody Blues? Were you a part of that scene or not really?
I did, because my oldest sister, Jan, was the Moody Blues' biggest American fan. And she's kind of like us with McCartney. You know? She's not so much that anymore, but she listened to all their songs. And, God, if I never hear Nights and Wait saying again, I'm fine. But I love Go Now. I think that's a blue-eyed soul gem.
Bessie
and
Banks.
The version on Wings Over America is awesome.
Yeah.
Because not only does it retain the Blue Eyed Soul that Danny Lane's original vocal gave it. But Paul and Linda on their backing vocals are just fabulous. They really gave it that Wings feel.
Yes, they certainly did.
Sure did.
Yeah. I suspect they did some significant overdubbing in the studio on the backing vocals for that song, though, because it just sounds too perfect for a live performance.
Yeah, well, the Last Flight version is also equally as good, too.
Is that what he did from 89? Because I know he re-recorded or re-released it, I think, in 89.
89?
I was seeing some clips that he did for, I think he did like a British, like a TV show, talk show type thing. And he performed it live. And
Thank Your Lucky Stars or something, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I'll have to go back.
This Is Your Life. Actually, This Is Your Life. That's the one.
Yeah, actually, our friend of the show, Adrian Allen, posted it on one of the Beatles Facebook pages. So I'll have to go back and check that out. But what's your thoughts of Denny, Andy?
Overall, I only knew of him through Wings initially due to my age, but that early Moody Blues period it's been reevaluated recently. And Denny, if you follow him on social media, he posts quite a bit about his early Moody Blues days. There's some good tracks there. You know, he did, just one album with them, The Magnificent Moodies, right. I think is the first one. It's a good record. Overall, with his, obviously his contribution to Wings, I mean, he's outside of Paul and Linda, the longest standing member and vital, vital part of the entire sound, in my opinion. Right. So he was the glue.
The only Wings member who never quit or got fired.
I think he was rewarded for that largely with London Town, which we can talk about later. But I think that's one of the reasons why that album is so Denny heavy anyway, because it's almost like it was like a subconscious, like a thank you to Paul, because he's stuck by him all those years,
Yeah.
It's just a thought. I don't know.
Right.
I haven't heard either of you mention his superlative guitar talents. He's a great guitar
player. Yeah, he is.
I think he's decent. I mean, I don't think he's, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like McCartney's guitar playing a little bit more than.
Well,
than
Jimmy McCulloch, too, was such a whiz kid.
Right, and I think some of the other lead guitarists kind of overshadow him a little bit. I know Henry and Jimmy and definitely Lawrence.
And that's true. It was a good point. Like Denny during the Wings tour too, he would pick up any instrument and play it. He'd play piano if Paul was playing bass. So to your point, Ted, is well taken. He was a very, very incredible musician from that standpoint. Could hop on and play anything really, short of drums probably.
Yeah. On that tour, he played Go Now on piano.
On piano, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I was amazed. With the re-release and remix of Red Rose Speedway, I was amazed at the amazing, tremendous interplay, electric guitar interplay between Henry and Denny on some of those songs. Like, if you ever listen to the live version of Best Friend, wow.
Oh,
the guitars are crunchy.
Very crunchy.
Also, The Mess and even One More Kiss. Those two electric guitars on that are great.
Yeah, and stuff like Old Siam, Sir, too, from Back to the Egg, between him and, Lawrence Juber, crunch, that crunchy feel to those guitars as well. So, I mean, that's what I think, he's a great, second mate. I'm sure you've been in bands before, Ted, and understand the importance of having, someone else that can be a multi-talented instrumentalist, can hop onto instrument to instrument, especially during live shows like that. So, I mean, to be able to stick with Paul, who, is probably not always the easiest person to work with, but like you said, Andy, gets rewarded with some songwriting credits and, it had to have been, Malik and Tyre had to have been a big payday for him as getting, royalty checks.
Absolutely.
Throughout, I'm sure 77 and 78,
Have any of you guys been fortunate enough to meet him at a convention or a concert?
I have not.
No, My cousin and original co-host, David, he had saw him last year, and he toured last year, he did the whole Band on the Run album, and he was, you know, right there pretty much in front row watching him perform the whole Band on the Run album. So
yeah, I've seen him a few times over the last 10 years because he plays in my neck of the woods here on the East Coast quite a bit. His shows have always been good. I met him at a Beatle Fest about 10 years ago, and he signed my copy of Wildlife, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Tom, you may remember the Detroit suburb called Royal Oak.
That's where he played.
He did. Just before the pandemic hit, mm-hmm. and he did stuff like Again and Again and Again, yeah. and just right. really deep album tracks that were really interesting. I could not see him, but I read the review afterwards, and it was glowing.
Yeah, it's nice that he's kind of he picked up the baton there with the Wings material, and I guess a couple of years ago the other surviving members of Wings got together at a fest and played.
Right.
You know, so that was really cool to see. So, Lawrence Juber.
That was the Jersey Fest last year, 2019. Yeah.
19, I think it was. Yeah. So
it was what it was. Was it Juber? Was it Denny? And was it also
Denny Sywell too.
Right. Yeah, that would have been some music lineup right there.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
You got the best of all three worlds pretty much right there. I mean, you got Denny who was the constant, and then you got, you know, Denny representing the beginning, and then you got Lawrence representing the end. So that had to have been an amazing show. I know our friend Kit O'Toole got to see it. I know she talked glowingly about it. So, you know, unfortunately, we weren't able to make it to the fest this year.
No.
Thanks to COVID. But there'll be more fests in the future, I hope.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Well, let's get into the songs here. Like I said, his first song that he brought to the table was I Would Only Smile. Unfortunately, he didn't make the final cut. As we talked about, it was a proposed double album. That song more than likely would have been on there, but unfortunately, that didn't happen. It got cut to a single album, so that got cut. So first thing that the first song that they worked on together would be No Words from Band on the Run, 1973, which is, you know, I'm so tired of the rest of the songs that this is pretty much the only song I'll play now from Band on the Run. It's
not even Mammonia?
Oh, I never liked Mammonia. This is I love No Words. Andy, what's your thought on
I love Words? The live version of No Words from the Glasgow show.
Oh, 79, right. Okay.
Because and it's nice because before he plays it, he actually intros and says, hey, this is the first song we actually ever wrote on together. So right. It's nice to hear it. Here, you know, they play a song that's kind of really been left to the side, and it's been given a tremendous live version on that Glasgow show from 79. It's up there. I mean, what'd they write about? I mean, how many songs total did they write together or that came out? 10?
No, you got this, and then you got Mullican Tire, and then the 5 on London Town.
So right, so I mean, obviously Mullican Tire is like up here, right?
Yeah. And Rain Clouds, I think.
Too. And Rain Clouds.
And Rain Clouds, but No Words, yes. No Words might be, you know, up. It's definitely up there. For sure. I mean, there's so few, and, you know, my thoughts on the entire, the 10 songs or whatever, they're all good quality songs. I mean, there's hardly one of them that's a duffer. I don't think they're all good.
Right.
In my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see here. Like I said, this is the first official co-write with Paul. It's mainly a Denny song. Paul helped with the middle eight. Paul was also got to sing that the middle eight as well with a great falsetto voice of his. And Ted, what are your thoughts on the song No Words?
Yeah, it's their best song written together, I would say. Certainly the most commercial and most radio-friendly, even though it got overshadowed by the other songs on Band on the Run.
Right.
But I agree with you. It's a fun listen, and the live version is outstanding. I don't know for a fact, and you guys probably do, so it's a good opportunity to ask you, who plays the outro electric guitar solo?
You know, that's, I think that's been in question for a while, and you know,
I had to guess. It was probably, it's probably Lawrence Juber. You mean on the
version?
Oh, on the studio version.
Oh yeah, on the studio version. I think it's Paul. It sounds just like Taxman.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Ted. I think that's Paul on the outro of that song because it's got that very, you know.
Yeah.
It sounds like his Epiphone.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah. So much of the album was done by Paul anyway. I mean, you know, the odds are it was him, right?
Yeah.
If anybody out there knows for sure, please let us know.
You can tell us.
TwoLegsPodcast@gmail.com. Or you can, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can
Let me just have a quick look at these notes here while you guys are talking. Go ahead.
but anyways, yeah, no words right off the bat. As soon as I heard that song, it was a favorite. I'm a ballad type kind of person, and it is a little ballady. I love, you know, Paul's middle falsetto version. I love the backing vocals with Paul and Linda, you know, backing Denny, and it's a very strong, strong vocal performance from the three. I love the little oops of the drums that you talk about. I think it was like right around the 1 minute mark. You know, there's this drum silence, and then you hear the, you know, they built the orchestra, you know, yeah. or the arrangement around that. So a lot of fun. And
what I like about it on the live version, you can hear the difference. Paul really singing the high part in the harmony. Okay. You know, and then Denny taking the lower register right from the beginning of the song on the live version. You can hear that. A little more bounced down on the studio version because on the production, but on the live version, you know, okay, Paul's going high and Denny's going low on that song, and it's a nice blend of their harmonies. Right, this doesn't say who did what, so
yeah, it's I don't think, was that the 25th anniversary edition or the archive?
25th.
Yeah. That's a you know, crappy thing about a lot of the liner notes on these albums is they'll tell you who played on them, but you won't really get the feel or
back then anyway. Now they'll tell you who made tea and who, you know, who brought them and, you know, everything else.
You can't always trust them though. They're not always right.
Oh no, their memories aren't there. Well, I mean, as we know, I mean, their memories aren't that great. So anyways, so moving forward, there was this, Wings are in Nashville, okay? They record Sally G. Paul kind of challenges Denny Lane to write a country song, so he does. He writes Send Me the Heart, which they record in 74 as well. Again, that's not on any Wings album.
Dan Ely heard that song.
Yeah, exactly. it's not released again. It's released on Japanese Tears. Just like I Would Only Smile. This would have been a great 1-2 punch with Sally G. I mean, I thought this would have made a great country single. You know, really surprised they didn't go that way with it. Andy, what's your thoughts on Send Me Your Heart?
I mean, I like it. I don't love it. I think it would have been fine. I think it would have been a good B-side.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sally G, A-side, and, Send Me the Heart, the B-side.
Easily. You know, I think all their songs, though, it's, for me, it ranks on the bottom portion of their collaboration for me.
Right. I mean, there's not a lot of information about if, you know, Denny just came up with the lyrics and Paul helped with the arrangements or not. But,
right.
You know, there is some info out there. I think it's, if you go to the Paul McCartney Project, I think is the name of the website, you'll
get that's a good site, info, too. Yeah.
Obviously, there's, you know, the info here on the, you know, the great In Arms to Hold You book as well. So, Ted, are you familiar with this one?
Yeah, I am. It's sort of out country Sally G, although Sally G is a better song. Mm-hmm. I think Denny's song kind of uses every sort of country music cliche at the time, you know, right. Early to mid-70s, and puts it to good use. Mm-hmm. It's very believable as a country song, even though that's not his real thing. But think of Wings during that Red Rose Speedway to 74 period. I mean, I Lie Around, Country Dreamer.
Yeah.
Big Barn Bed. There's all kinds of country references. One More Kiss, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's right in keeping with kind of what they were doing at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff. Moving forward, Denny writes Spirits of Ancient Egypt for Venus and Mars. So that's his like first actual solo composition for a Wings album. Then I believe, was it then he writes Time to Hide for the sound. Right. So he's starting to get a little bit more, you know, out there now. You know, maybe he's feeling more comfortable in the band or more comfortable as a songwriter. We really don't know how much Paul is actually helping him, you know, get these songs out there, but they're just solo Denny Lane writing credits.
I think Denny thinks Time to Hide is probably one of his best compositions out there.
Always plays it live.
Yeah. But I think mm-hmm. both tracks are killer on the the Wings Over America disc. I think, you know, the band really, you know, kicks ass on both versions.
They do. I enjoy those recordings in a live setting. I'm sure. I don't know if Ted, you agree. Then the ones on the studio live, they just have so much more punch to them.
Oh, they do. Let's not pass over so lightly the Note You Never Wrote, which Denny didn't write, but he sang. That's a weird song.
Again, like I Lie Around, here's Paul writing a song for
giving
Denny. Giving it to him, which, you know, he thinks he would be great at singing, and he does. He kills it.
Nailed it. Yep.
Is there a version of Paul singing that song floating out there? Is it on the box set? I can't remember.
Must Be Something About It.
That's the one. Yes. Yeah. Yep. It's too pity that we didn't get a version of Paul doing the Note You Never Wrote. That would have been cool.
Well, it's on the Speed of Sound box thing.
Is it?
As an extra.
I thought that was for... Or the Joe English song.
It is. Oh, I'm sorry, Andy. I was still talking about Must Do Something About It. Paul's version is better than Paul's, I think. His vocals.
It's good. It's a good, like the one and only Joe English vocal, but it's good.
Yeah.
No, it's great.
Yeah.
He was a talented singer, and, you know, obviously he leaves Wings and he forms his own band, and, you know, he has a few albums with the Joe English Band, I think they were called. More of a a religious type band.
Yeah.
You know, Christian rock or something like that, whatever you want to call it. But I do have one of the albums that he put out. I just haven't listened to it yet. But I'm kind of curious to see how it sounds. So obviously now with Venus and Mars and Wings at the Sound, Denny's starting to bring more songs into the mix. He's getting more lead vocals than he had in the earlier Wings days. So, you know, his presence is being felt a little bit more in the band, which I'm sure Paul is happy about, because, you know, I'm sure he doesn't want to do everything or have every lead vocal, you know, as well. So maybe
he's definitely spreading the wealth around by Venus and Mars, and certainly by Speed of Sound, you know?
Cool. So then now the granddaddy of them all, 1977, the UK number one hit single that just kept on coming and coming and coming, Mull of Kintyre. This is just, I remember the first time I heard this one back in the late 80s. Didn't know what to really feel about it. I wasn't like a real big, like a world, you know, music type fan, you know, listening to instruments from outside, you know, in other parts of the country. But I've come to really love this song. You know, Denny talks about how they finished the verses. Paul had already had the chorus as early as, I believe, 73 or 74. So he talks about how they they're outside and had a bottle of whiskey with them, and they just finished the song.
Do you know the breakup of the who wrote what on that song, like lyrically, specifically wise? I mean, is it out there?
No, it's just more or less Denny talks about how Paul just had the chorus and then they nailed the verses.
They did. I was just always curious. If, you know, they say they wrote it together, but I was always curious on actually who wrote what. But that's not really documented anywhere.
No, exactly. So
I would say that it's one of McCartney's best set of lyrics as a solo artist.
Interesting. Yeah. Far have I traveled and much have I seen.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, exactly. You know, huge hit. You know, I'm sure this brought in a lot of money for both Paul and
not Ben. Here.
Not here, though. But no.
It could have been. It could have been. I really think it could have been.
You know, but Girls' School is a great track too. I would wish that would have been a bigger hit here. You know.
Yeah, right. It's hardly any McCartney single has aged so poorly in terms of its sentiments. Mm. Let's just put it that way.
Mull of Kintyre, are you saying, Ted?
What?
Mull of Kintyre or Girls' School?
No, Girls' School.
Girls' School. Oh God. Oh yeah. Yeah. He wouldn't become a dead playing that one.
Yeah, right. it wouldn't get released now.
No. Right.
I did hear not too long ago that Paul had bought out Denny Lang's songwriting credits for Mull of Kintyre.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Was it?
Oh, that was ages ago. That was okay. Like probably in the early 80s, I think that happened.
Okay.
But from what I've read.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm interested to hear more about that and seeing how that song would be handled in future, you know, releases. I looked at the McCartney, the Peter McCartney set, because Mull of Kintyre is on that.
It how is it credited?
There's no credit on it. So
did you check Wingspan?
No, I did not check Wingspan.
Yeah, I think Denny's credited on Wingspan.
Yeah, let's take a look here while we're talking. Mull of Kintyre. No credits. Let me see.
No credits? Oh. Okay.
Well, but wait a minute. No, we've got credits. We've got credits here. Wait, we do.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you figured there's a lot of Paul and Linda credits on there as well.
Okay, so I don't know. Denny Lane is credited on track 14, which is, yeah, he gets a credit in Wingspan. He does.
Okay. Great.
Cool. He does. But you're saying in the Pierre McCartney, there's no credit?
Yeah, I didn't see one. Yeah. So
I think it's at the long list of the liner notes where it says track 1 through 7, Linda right. And Paul McCartney, you know, and
right. No, I mean, even though he paid, you know, he bought the percentage back, I mean, he still can credit it, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, it doesn't mean he
didn't do it.
He didn't do it. And it doesn't mean that Paul wants him not to have credit.
You know,
he's just getting the
drug. Right. I think if you were to ask Denny now, he would be sorry that he sold that. But at the time, he probably needed the money and did it.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I think, like I said, you know, whether or not you're going through divorce or, you know, you're raising kids, which he was doing at the time.
Living the lifestyle as a rock star, you know, traveling and touring as much as they did. Not that they did a whole lot of touring, because the Wings tours are really sporadic, but mm-hmm. You get used to that lifestyle, all of a sudden Japan 80 hits and you stop. And
which they still get, which everybody still got paid for.
Right. Mm-hmm. But he was used to that lifestyle. So, you know, he took an opportunity to make a sale on the song and he did it. But, you know, you can only do that what you can do at the time.
Right, right. So that song's recorded during the London Town session. So we're going to start talking about London Town now. As we know, I believe that's what, five tracks from London Town that they wrote together. Some quality stuff right there. I mean, some, you know, one of them was a single, one was a B-side. So let's dig right in. First track, we got London Town, which is the song that opens London Town. Ted, your thoughts on London Town?
It's the best song on the album, I think, by far. Wow. It's the most melodic, the most interesting from arrangement standpoint. It's got great vocals and pretty good words. It's a great album opener.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing about it is, you know, I was listening to interviews with Paul regarding this track, and he talks about how the opening The opening lyric was started by him and Linda in 75.
Melbourne.
So that's, yeah, that's the case. It's funny that she didn't get a writing credit on this one as well. So that probably would have been the first, you know, Paul, Linda, and Denny, you know, credit. But yeah, then finished with Denny in 76. You know, I love the harmonies on this one. It is, you know, maybe a little, I love Jimmy's guitar work at the end of it. I think that's a great addition to it. But yeah, I think it's cool. It's it was number 39 here in the States and 60 in the UK. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Oh, easily the best song on the album and probably in my top 10 all-time Paul McCartney songs since I was a young teenager. I mean, I used to wear it out. My mother used to say, play another goddamn song, please. I did. But I think
Cafe on the Left Bank.
Yeah, well, I would just pick it up. Or I'd skip the CD back. If we talk about, Tom talked about the harmonies on this. There's a great YouTube clip, and if you haven't seen it, I'll send it to you guys. It's about 30 seconds, and it's a snippet of just the harmonies of London Town with Paul, Linda, and Denny. And that is the Wings sound, I mean, pure. There's no lead vocals. I actually think it might be Linda and Denny, because obviously Paul's doing the top, right?
It's pretty much just an isolated backing track then, right?
That's what it is. And then there's another song. It's only about a minute clip. But you hear about 20 seconds of London Town, and you hear that, and you're like, that's the Wings sound. And I'll send it to you guys afterwards to hear it. But it's something that encapsulates what Wings was to me. And I'm sure you would agree.
So lacking on these box sets, isolated vocal tracks. You know, I would love to get like a silly love song when they're doing their harmonies on that for, you know, Wings at the Speed of Sound, you know, or any of these great backing tracks. And harmonies that they did throughout their career. I mean, I know what Lennon had a couple. I think there was a couple isolated tracks on the Imagine box set.
Yeah, that was done with that.
And the same thing with the last three Beatles box sets. There were some isolated vocal tracks as well. You know,
what
a great addition that would be to the archive series.
It certainly would, because their Wings harmonies were so rich. They deserve to be heard in that way, you know, because it's really, you know, they were so talented with those voices blending together, you know.
Absolutely. Next track, moving forward, we got Children, which it was primarily a Denny song. You know, I believe he had two children at the time. There's interviews where he's talking about how, you know, having kids kind of inspired the song. And then also there's another interview where he talks about being in Paul's backyard and there was, you know, kids playing by a water, like a little fountain or whatever. And he got the inspiration from there. So Denny pretty much, you know, wrote the lyrics. Paul helped with the arrangement, and that was the collaboration on that. Paul suggested the kind of like the fairy tale child, you know, song aspect of the track. So, Ted, your thoughts on Children?
It's my least favorite of their collaborations for that reason. It just sounds gimmicky and sort of fluffy to me. It's not a terrible song, but it's not my favorite.
It's funny that he allowed, or he agreed to have that kind of, excuse me, child aspect to the song after, you know, he kind of, you know, flubs off, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb, you know, so kind of, you know, is pretty funny that he agreed to go that way with the song. But Andy, what are your thoughts?
I largely agree with the both of you guys. It's very twee, you know.
Twee.
It just is. Although it's light, it doesn't change the overall mood of the album, because the whole album kind of has that whole kind of vibe to it, aside from the one or two rockers, Name and Address and stuff like that. Right. But it does it doesn't weigh the album down, but it's not anything earth shattering. So I agree. It's probably one of the least ones of their, you know, cause it's just very, you know, again, it's very folky and, you know, they could have done a little bit better on that one, in my opinion, but you know, not a bad song.
As in, like, arrangement, you'd probably change the arrangement to that?
Probably, you know, or some, so you'd have to change it up a little bit. You know, it just is a little too childlike. Like Mary Had a Little Lamb is a kid's song, but this is like really like, I don't know. It just feels much more childlike for this one, for that reason, you know, but it is what it is. Gotcha. I mean, it's not a, again, you know, I don't, I'll tell you this way. I don't skip it when I play the album, you know, mm-hmm. I just, okay. I just let it play through.
Gotcha. Next song moving forward is, I'm going to tell you, say this was my favorite of all of the tracks that they did, or all the songs that they did together. That's Deliver Your Children, which was the
B-side. The whole collaboration? This is your favorite?
This is my favorite of all their collaboration.
Awesome.
Records. So, you know, B-side 2, I've Had Enough, mainly written again by Denny during the Venus and Mars sessions. The original title was going to be Feel the Love. And I know again, Paul helped with the arrangements, and, you know, like I said, Denny, was with the lyrics. Again, what we were talking about earlier, their voices, how one was higher, one was lower. I think this one, it works beautifully on this track. You know, you get a little, you know, Linda mixed in there as well. I love the speed of it. You know, the faster acoustic sounding acoustic guitars on it. Lyrically, I think it's really cool. You know, again, you know, for some reason Denny had children on the mind, so he's got another song with the word children in it. But yeah, this is my favorite of all the songs that they worked on. Andy, what about you?
Agreed. It's up there too. I don't know if maybe Ted can tell us. It sounds like it's a Spanish guitar or a flamingo guitar on this.
Yeah.
And it's also it's in a minor key, which sort of gives it that sort of dramatic sound. And there is a Spanish guitar on it.
I thought there was.
Right. Yeah. Denny took Spanish guitar lessons, so he was the one that played.
He lived in Spain for a while. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The chorus is probably the strongest chorus that they came up with. It's just, I mean, the delivery of it, the syncopation, everything on it that Tom had mentioned is so strong. I mean, it almost has single potential, really.
Well, maybe that's why they decided to put it on the B-side, because they felt it was, you know, it was a strong song.
Strong, you know, and the lyrics work, you know, they come along at a good clip. You know, it's a good collaboration and one of their strongest, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ted, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I like that song too, especially the musical aspects of it. It's just got a confusing story arc to it. It starts out with, you know, save your children, protect your children, show them the good life. And it turns into kind of a cops and robbers type thing.
Right.
Low on money, truck broke down.
Yeah, and apparently that was, you know, some experiences that Denny had in the past. So he's kind of like brought some past experiences into the song. Yeah. You know, truck breaking down, you know, no one can fix it, you know. So,
and so it ends on that, just that wild note, if you want good eggs.
Oh, you got a bad hand.
Which is,
that might be my favorite part.
We did a show on London Town without, and we talked about it. So I remember talking about this track in detail, but it's kind of buried in there on the middle of side two, but you know, just, you know, that's, you know, probably the, you know, well, London Town, I feel as a whole, is the apex of that collaboration between Paul and Denny. I've always felt that is the high watermark of those two,
right,
where they were on the same page. They were probably as close as they were ever going to be, you know, before things kind of disintegrated. But because Back to the Egg is still Back to the Egg, but London Town, that album is like Paul and Denny are as close as they could be in terms of, you know, partners, as collaborators, friends. To me, that's the apex of that. That album is the apex of that relationship.
Which then begs, you know, which makes you wonder, why did that collaboration then all of a sudden just pretty much just came into a halt? You know, because they would only work on, you know, collaborate on one more song, you know, which we'll get to in a little bit. But next up, we've got Don't Let It Bring You Down.
Which I know you don't like, right?
Yeah, this was probably my bottom tier of collaborations. You know, written by Paul and Denny in the Virgin Islands. Actually, I think this was the last song they worked on before they went back to London to finish London Town. Started by Paul in 75, and then Denny helped with the arrangements. So there you go. There's interviews, actually, where you hear Paul talking about well, you know, we're both helping each other with our own arrangements, you know, meaning, you know, Denny would bring in a song and Paul would help it. Paul would bring in a song and Denny would help with the arrangements. So, excuse me, pretty interesting with that one. You know, again, I do like a lot of the folksy feel on this album, but this track just, you know, kind of almost a little too slow for me. You know, Paul's voice is really low on it. On a couple.
It's low, but then it goes to this crazy, right. The crazy falsetto at the end, which is so
exactly,
good.
Exactly. So it is interesting.
Vocal, it's a vocal exercise, is what it is.
Right. But musically, for me, it's just not, doesn't work for me. Ted, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's in the bottom tier of my Lane McCartney collaborations. The thing I don't like about it is kind of what you said, Tom. It's really slow and kind of plodding, and it's in the same exact key as the previous song, and you can tell because there's hardly any space between the previous song and this one, and it sounds like a continuation of Deliver Your Children.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I'd say I have it ranked a little bit higher just because of the everything that's going on in it musically. And it's got that great instrument, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, the flageolet, the Irish.
Right. Flageolet,
the Irish tin whistle. Mm-hmm. And just for the production value alone and the vocal workouts up there, as a song, to your point, I agree, it's not a great song, but everything that's thrown into it brings it up a little bit for me.
Mm. Very cool.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Now, the next song, the last song on the album, which is kind of, in a way, is kind of surprising to me, where, you know, you don't see those two really get into much of an experimental type, as much as More Smooth and the Grey Goose, as you will. I mean, you know, Denny's had, you know, experimented with, you know, a little bit of, you know, orchestration with, you know, with his band, you know, after Moody Blues. And, you know, Paul, as we know, is a great experimenter and lover of, all things avant-garde. So it's kind of crazy that they didn't do more stuff, you know, like this in their time together. But More Smooth and the Grey Goose, it was when we did their London Town review, you know, it was a track that I didn't really listen to a lot leading up to that. And then, you know, rediscovering that song. Yeah, rediscovering that song was a lot of fun. Excuse me. And I just had, you know, accumulated a really great appreciation for this track.
Another kitchen sink track is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just more or less Paul and Denny. I think Paul was on electric guitar electric piano, doing kind of like a Morse code type thing. And then, you know, Denny was just, you know, banging on the piano. And I think they just, you know, improvised this for like 6 minutes. And then they took it back to London and, you know, finished it there. But Andy, what are your thoughts on the song?
As a kid, I hated it. But as I've grown up, you know, the last 20 or so years, I've really come to love it. I couldn't stand it as a teenager, but I really love it now. Especially the bass groove in it. Oh my God!
Yeah, it's great.
The bass groove in that song is great. Now it's 6 minutes of, you know, nonsense and everything, but you know, you need to expect the unexpected when it comes to Paul. You know, and it's. I think it's a wonderful album closer to a wonderful album, everything about it. But the bass work in it is what does that song for me. So
I think this is a great exercise of their potential, and you know, going into a completely different turn.
Yeah, it takes so many different turns with a lot of McCartney's songs. Like there's three songs within one there. You know, So yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Ted.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's a good album closer, and I really like the mashup on the Twin Freaks album that includes More Smooth and the Grey Goose. Really effective, and it sounds it really gives that song another color. But I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, very cool. It's you really wonder when this does get its box set archive treatment, how people are going to really reassess this.
Right.
Here for the first time.
They just get that original 6 minutes of them just going crazy on the piano, an electric piano, you know.
That'll be great. You know, that's another, we've been talking box sets, but this one as one of my favorite albums is going to be great for and when it gets this treatment, because there's going to be all right. this. We're going to get to see the McCartney Lane collaborations talked about. Maybe Denny gets a little more space in the book to talk about the stuff that he wrote with Paul during this time period. So who knows?
Yeah, that'll be great. Go ahead.
Hopefully, it'll include the great lost Denny Lane gem called "Find a Way Somehow." Do you guys know about that song?
Yes, but what period does that originate from, Ted? This one?
That was recorded during the sessions for London Town. I don't know if it was written then, but the recording of it is great.
Yeah, it'll be
bluesy, guitar-heavy song, and he sings it with the same kind of soul he does Go Now. Mm-hmm. It's not unlike Go Now, as a matter of fact,
okay,
in structure. So I hope that's on there.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be really cool to see that. So that's pretty much it then for the 7.
Just to touch upon, I'll just read the quick sentence out of 8 Arms. Find a way somehow. This is again Chip and them said this unremarkable track first appeared on Denny's Ah Lane LP in 1973, but a new version was recorded during the Watermelon Bass sessions with Denny on keyboards, Paul on bass, Jimmy on guitar, and Joe on drums. Apparently, the song was under consideration for inclusion on the LP, but at one point was thankfully dropped in favor of a strong material. That's Chip and Mark for you, though.
In favor of what?
In favor of stronger material for the album.
Yeah.
It didn't fit inside the song.
Yeah. And then you bring up a good point, too, that I wanted to talk about is because, you know, he does release, Denny, that is, 3 solo albums during his stint, you know, in Wings. Ah Lane, which you brought up, and then you got Holly Days, which is pretty much a Lost Wings album too, if you think about it, because it's just Paul, Linda, and Denny on there, and then you've also got Japanese Tears, which is released before Wings officially disbanded as well. You know, yeah, so you know, so he's got material, and it's funny thing that you know he releases the Ah Lane, you know, in 73. You know, did Paul not think that any of these songs had potential to go on a Wings album? You know, kind of curious.
Well, listen, it's Paul's band, not Denny's, you know.
Right. Yeah. Sure, but, you know, if for somebody that wanted to encourage Denny to write more songs, well, here you go. Here's a batch of songs that, you know, they could have worked on.
Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's the boss. Yeah,
exactly. So moving forward to 79, obviously we've got Back to the Egg. Denny writes Again and Again and Again, which is his main contribution songwriting-wise to Back in the Egg. Then we move up to 82, where we get the song Rain Clouds, which was the B-side.
Really, I didn't mean to cut you off, but really, I mean, by 82, Denny was really out of the picture. It was really
right. So, I mean, it's released in 82. They record it, or they finish it pretty much the day after of Lennon's death.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as it's well documented that he ended up going to work just to drown himself into work, and we all know the comment that he made, you know, to the press later on. Which we talked about with our last week's guest, in his book, and then that great interview that he did, that Paul McCartney for Q Magazine. But, Rain Clouds is, you know, this one I think is on the bottom of my list of McCartney Lane collaborations. There is a really cool version or a bootleg version of Wings performing it with Denny on lead vocals, and it's kind of like a run through. We'll probably play this in the show. It's interesting. Their arrangement wasn't really kind of realized yet. Like I said, Paul's kind of like doing a run through of it, and it's never been really one of my favorites, especially vocally wise. I'm not really a big fan of how it sounds vocally. Ted, how do you feel about Rain Clouds?
The introduction sounds like these boots are made for walking.
Yeah,
that's what I think of when I hear that jangly guitar playing that chord.
Okay.
Same chord as the opening to Boots Are Made for Walking. But, you know, it seems like an elementary lesson on weather phenomenon. I don't like that part of it. you know, rain, clouds will block the sun, right. You know.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Pretty simple lyrically. You know, Andy, what are your thoughts?
I think I like it more for the mystique that surrounds that song, and that in that it was worked on after Lennon's death. As a song itself, you know, it's nothing great, but I do like the work of Patty Maloney on it.
Right.
Which is real. I do like that. Product, you know, but the fact that there's so much associated with that song with Lennon's passing,
right,
is probably why it's elevated a little bit in my consciousness. It's probably one of the first B-sides I kind of discovered as a young McCartney fan, because it was, you know, you read in all these books. Oh, he worked on a song called Rain Clouds. Ooh, what's that sound like? You know, so you get caught up in that kind of hysteria of, well, what's this about? So.
Right.
Speaking
of Patty, there's some great quotes from him and the Luca Brasi book.
Yeah, so
talking about that track. So,
but it's I think it's again it's more of an important thing. Like, I mean, how many, you know, Denny Lane was with Paul McCartney the day after he found out about John Lennon being killed. That's that's pretty significant day in someone's life, you know. So
right,
Denny was there, you know, the day that Paul heard the worst news ever. So. Yeah, but I didn't realize it was a Lane and McCartney collaboration at the time, but it ended up being, you know, that. So again, nothing great. It's at the bottom, but again, the stature of the history that goes with it is kind of what elevates it a little bit for me.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of get the sense. Oh, go ahead, Ted.
Go ahead, Tom.
Kind of get like the sense it's kind of like the final, you know, thank you to Denny. You know, here, I'll get you, you know, this is our last collaboration. Let's put it on a B-side. So that way, you know, it's out there. You know, maybe he makes a couple extra bucks on it because, you know, he's got the songwriting credit on
it. That's a good possibility.
You know, so.
Ted, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say that it would not have been out of place on London Town. It has that same sort of acoustic guitar vibe and stuff.
Plus, you've got the Irish, you know, you got the whistle on it again, so it would have fit in.
Right. Yeah, good point. Very good point.
Yeah, but again, it goes back to 79 when he was rehearsing it with the last incarnation of Wings. So it was certainly floating around in gestation in that era. So,
So those are the songs. If there was any other songs missing that we missed, I think we got them all. Let us know. But Ted, where do you rank this? I mean, there's Paul has collaborated with, you know, we'll keep John Lennon out of this. Let's just go, because because the main ones, obviously, we got Lane, we got Eric Stewart, we got Elvis Costello. You know, a little bit of Michael Jackson, but
Stevie Wonder.
Yes, right. Well, Stevie, a little bit. But of the collaborations, where would you rank this particular collaboration in McCartney's solo career?
Number one, not even close, because it was the longest. It stood the test of time. It survived many, many band configurations. Different band configurations, and he was the one constant from 71 to 81, right? And so Linda's probably the number one collaboration, obviously. He
that's
lived
possible.
With
it. Right.
I'd say Denny, number one in terms of musician, fellow band member, and co-writer. Yeah.
Interesting. You know, I tend to, you know, sometimes agree, but then, you know, every time I listen to those great tracks that he did with Elvis Costello, I kind of, you know, flip-flop, you know, so right now I'm still really high on the Costello tracks. So I just think that lyrically they're better, maybe not as interesting musically as some of the tracks with Denny Lane. But I, you know, as being a lyric guy, I really think the Costello ones are stronger. So maybe you can be like a 1A and a 1P, but now I'm just going to say that it's number two on my list, just behind the Elvis Costello collaborations. Andy, what about you?
Like Ted, easily number one based on longevity alone for 10 years. Right. I mean, that's a, Yeah, but again, I agree with you. Lyrically, the Costello stuff is stronger than this. But the success, I mean, because these we talked about what 10 songs, so and it was like, you know, from an album here. It was very right. What you're talking about is a concentrated period of, you know, heavy writing and collaboration, right, resulting in an album for the most part for a short period. Whereas we're talking about 10 or 12 songs over the course of a 10-year period, which was very fruitful and very good. But it was so successful that I think on that reason alone, it has to stand alone as number one, to Ted's point.
Yeah, and one other thing we haven't discussed when comparing Elvis to Denny Lane. Obviously, Elvis Costello is a much better songwriter than Denny Lane. I don't think anyone's going to deny that. But McCartney recruited Elvis Costello as a songwriting partner. He did not recruit Denny Lane as a songwriting partner. He recruited him as a band member. So that's a big difference.
Good point. Yeah. Great point, yeah. Ted.
I like that.
He wanted to be a band member, not a collaborator.
Right.
Right. So I guess you could argue, is it really a collaboration? If you're looking at it, is it like a, it's not the same level of a collaboration that it was with Costello. But it was a collaboration, just not on the same terms.
But you're in the studio together every day for 10 years.
Man. No, yeah, it is. Right. Yeah. Of course it is. Of course it is. It's just a different, you know, like, to your point, he was recruited to be a member of the band, not, hey, my career is sagging and I need a shot in the arm. Please help me out.
That's right.
Like a story that he was sleeping in like his manager's office or something like that prior to joining up. Denny Lane.
Oh, Denny. Yeah, he was living like in his manager's office or something.
On a houseboat.
Right.
Okay. He was in a houseboat for a while. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. The last thing he did he just was with Ginger Baker's Air Force before the wings, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, and Balls. So I think Balls and Ginger Baker's Air Force was roughly the same period.
Right. Oh, boy, did we forget them?
Yeah. Andy, what's your favorite of the what's your favorite track of the what was the, I don't remember if you said what was your favorite track
of the entire collaboration?
Yeah, of the Lane, of the McCartney Lane collaboration.
London Town.
London Town. Okay.
Yeah.
Ted, what was yours?
London Town's probably second, and I'm going to not say that because Andy already said it.
Sorry.
I'd go with No Words. I really like – that's one of the one of the hidden gems of the whole catalog, okay. I think.
Yeah, mine being – it's like I hear Deliver Your Children. For me, that's like number one, and then I hear No Words, and then if so, again, I have a little flip-flop thing going on with those two tracks, but – So getting back to No Words, I mean, if that's your pick for your favorite, let's get back to now your second edition of your book, Beatles Through Headphones, and let's wrap up the show with talking about this. You've been kind enough to agree to do a giveaway for the second edition, which we hope will be out right around December. So if you email three people, if you email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com, we'll be lucky winners. I think three, four, and five. Whoever was the third, fourth, and fifth person to email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com will win a copy of the second edition of The Beatles Through Headphones, which, you know, thank you, Ted, for doing that. I really appreciate that. And like I said, it's not going to be out till probably December. So obviously we'll announce a winner before then. So just have a little bit of patience. And as Ted lets us know when the release date is officially announced, then we'll also relay that message and then let everybody, the winners, know that information as well. So, Ted, is there anything else you want to plug before, obviously, there's the McCartney catalog.
Pick up the McCartney catalog. Get it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. You guys have been so supportive of that book. I really owe a lot of its relative success to you guys. So I want you to know how grateful I am. And that you keep having me on.
Absolutely. a good book to get for any new McCartney fan. Start them out with that one. That's the one
yeah,
to get.
That's not a bad little, yeah, cool. Very cool. So, as in, you have any contact information or do you just want to, you know, main, you know, do you have any like Facebook or Twitter or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, or you could just give out my email address if you want.
Okay.
I'm happy to field questions or answer questions about the book or whatever, talk about other projects. So can I send that to you guys?
Absolutely. Yeah, please do. Yeah. We'll put the link here on the description of the show as well. So,
okay. Sounds great.
Great. Thanks, guys. Awesome. Okay. So that's it for this week. Andy, anything else you want to add before we say our final goodbyes?
Yes. Yeah. We Two Legs is, you know, as ever is out there and improving and trying to get our content out to more and more places. And we're happy to report that we are now on Spotify. We are on Pandora. We are on TuneIn. We're everywhere now. So you can get us on any services that are out there right now. We're on YouTube as well. Tom will give you all the kind of stuff on that. But the YouTube channel is really taken off. We have 172 subscribers, and that is kind of our main go-to format. I mean, Podbean, we love all of our formats, but we're very, very excited about the YouTube platform for our shows because we get a lot of great comments on that. So
absolutely.
Yeah, we have you know, Two Legs is out there on any platform that you can get a podcast on now for. So
right.
You know, spread the news.
Right, and that's absolutely right. What you said about the YouTube, we love all the comments that we're getting on the YouTube channel. You know, we love all the emails as well. Any comment that we get, well, you know, we take them seriously. We look at them, read them, obviously, and you know, from time to time, we will respond to them as well. But as Andy said, we are everywhere. We're also on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, obviously, and so many other places. That's really thank you for all the work that you've been doing to you know, get this show out here out there, Andy. So great job, as always. Email us at twolegspodcast.com or I'm sorry, twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Now, again, I'll repeat the contest with Ted Montgomery. He's agreed to do a giveaway. We're doing three books of his second edition of the Beatles Through Headphones, which will hopefully be out in December. As I said earlier, third, fourth, and fifth person to email me at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. I'll let you know immediately if you are the third and fourth and fifth. You know, like I said, please have some patience on these books. As we know, he's still putting the finishing touches on them, and hopefully we'll get this out in December. So we got that to look forward to. Everybody, thank you so much for checking in. We really appreciate it. And we got a lot of great things ahead.
Hope you're all staying safe, too. And thank you for supporting us during this pandemic. And it's been an outlet for Tom and I, and we hope it's been an outlet for you as well.
Right. Yeah, next week we're going to be talking McCartney books. We're going to have a special guest, Joe Wisby from the UK, and we're going to just talk about some of our favorite McCartney books, some you may not have known, some that may have went under the radar, you know, the all the big titles out there, and are there too many? Or, is there not enough? You know?
Not enough on McCartney by himself, solo.
Right. Exactly. So we need some more McCartney solo books out there. Like we talked about, Alan Coase and Adrian Sinclair working on that great McCartney Legacy book.
Can't wait to read that. A lot of good books coming out this fall. There's that book, the Lennon book, which Womack's putting out. There are some great books coming out this fall. So it's going to be a good fall.
Absolutely. So everybody, thank you once again. As always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan C.